And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. Boy, it's a gloomy day, isn't it? Wow. Has the sun been out at all? I'm not sure. I haven't been outside a great deal thus far this morning, but I don't think. If it was out, it was like, you know, 2 seconds. One of those things. A gray day. We've had some rain in parts of our listening area. In fact, a goodly part of our listening area got rain within the past hour or two. Rain is moving through, and I'm not sure whether that's going to be the end of it or not today. National Weather Service still adjusting things as they have been. It's been iffy all day long, the forecast. So we'll keep you posted. We'll keep an eye on the radar for you. Maybe we'll be fairly dry the rest of the way. Tomorrow's looking good. Wednesday's looking good. So we'll see how we shape up. Hey, we have a good program today. It's a book talk day. We're going to be talking about a mystery thriller, an English mystery. The title is The Woman in Cabin 10 by Ruth Ware. Also on the program today, we'll be talking with John Stagno. John will be with us a little bit later on. We're going to be getting an update on Preston Park. That's the huge Butler Township park that came into being about 5 years ago, I guess. I'm not sure. But we'll get an update. There's lots of stuff going on there and plans for the future as well for Preston Park. So we'll be talking with John Stagno a little bit later on the program today. By the way, coming up tomorrow, we were able to reschedule our interview with Pastor John Pistorius from St. John's Reformed Church in Shakora, who was unable to be with us late last week. But he'll be talking about a consortium of ministers in the Garden City School District who are joining together to try to help families who have members battling the opioid crisis, the opioid addiction. Also on tomorrow's program, there's an interesting conference on polio coming up, and we'll be speaking with a couple of folks about that, including a good friend of ours, Joe Randig, will be with us on tomorrow's program. So, lots to look forward to tomorrow. We say hello to Kathy Klein from North Trails Library up in the West Sunbury area. Kathy, good afternoon. Nice to have you with us today.
Always a pleasure to be here, David.
You folks chose The Woman in Cabin 10 for a book talk this week. Book Talk, by the way, is a monthly affair. We do it on the fourth Monday of every month, and we do it in cooperation with the library system of Butler County. Various public libraries take turns selecting a book, and then they have folks come in, and we talk about it. This is a murder mystery, A Woman in Cabin 10, and it's a fairly new book. Kathy Klein just published last year.
It is. It is one that... as all libraries do, we get reviews and publications of new stuff coming out, and we kind of look at it and read it and try to see if it would be something that our readers and our communities, because each community may have a little different taste, you know, in their communities.
Absolutely, sure.
I know I have a big mystery following in North Trails, and so in reviewing, and I thought, this sounds a little bit like an Agatha Christie. And so I went ahead and I purchased it, and it's gotten great reviews from our readers.
Well, Ruth Ware is the author, W-A-R-E, like dinnerware, Ruth Ware. And she is English, so
she is.
I guess that's one reason why I have seen several reviewers refer to her as an Agatha Christie type writer.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. I was just looking at the writing style and the story and how it progresses and the twists and the turns and all that good stuff.
Well, I'll give her a few more books before I start comparing her to Agatha Christie, if you don't mind. I think this is her second In fact, I know it's her second, and I'm trying to think of the name of her first one, but I can't remember it right now. Oh, Dark In a Dark, Dark Wood. It was her first one, and it was a New York Times bestseller. So this one was pretty anxiously awaited. As you said, it came out last year. And I just read yesterday where CBS has picked up an option on it to perhaps make it into a TV movie or a miniseries.
Yes.
So that'll be interesting to follow as well.
Yeah, it will be.
Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty good mystery. If you're a mystery fan, I like mysteries for escapist reading. It's a murder mystery. We're not quite sure who is murdered. Actually, we're not quite sure if anyone is murdered. It's very, very bizarre.
The ending is kind of leaves you scratching your head, huh?
We're not going to give away the ending.
No.
So don't worry about spoilers here. We will set the stage, however, for the mystery. Most of it takes place on a luxury yacht. They refer to it as a cruise ship, but it's not big enough to be a cruise ship. It's more like a luxury yacht.
I think so, too, because wasn't it that it could only hold, like, maximum of 20 people or something like that?
Well, there
10 rooms.
There were 10 cabins, yeah.
10 cabins, mm-hmm. Maximum, I think, was 20 people. So.
Now, not that this was, a little mini yacht, like you might see a rich baseball player or somebody have. I mean, there were three decks. In fact, there were three decks, and then the whole engine room was below that. So this was a fairly big ship, but not a cruise ship, you know.
No, and it was very luxurious, I thought. I mean, just the layout and in all of the niceties that it was equipped with.
Yeah, just about everything except the gym.
Yes. Maybe it was there. It just wasn't mentioned.
Well, we had a spa. I had all kind of other stuff. I had a top deck hot tub, a large one. And, of course, these 10 luxurious passenger cabins. There were more cabins below, and I wasn't quite sure how to refer to the decks. There was a top deck. That's where the huge hot tub and some other stuff were. And then there was a deck that had the dining room and the library and the spa and all of that stuff.
Yeah, kind of like your social areas.
Yeah, the public areas for mm-hmm. the people who were on board. Not that there would be that many of them. And then the next deck down was where the luxury cabins were for the passengers. And then the next deck down below that is where the crew and the stewards and the wait people all lived.
Yes. Yeah, it was fully equipped. And was it, am I remembering correctly, was it the Aurora Borealis or something like that?
That was the name of the ship, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I think the name in itself just, you know, I just picture luxury and beauty.
I suppose that's why he named it that.
That's
yes.
Probably so.
Of course, the owner of the ship and one of the central characters is a British, not royalty, but he's peerage. He's Lord Richard Bulmer, and his wife is from Norway. And so, thus, the Northern Lights and the Aurora Borealis, I suppose, mm-hmm. for the name of the ship. However, although he is a central character, Lord Bulmer is not the central character.
No.
Nor is he the narrator. Who's that, Kathy? And tell us about her.
That is Lo Blacklock, I believe, was her last name. And actually, she was a journalist, and she wrote for Travel Magazine. Mm-hmm. And she had just been given this assignment, kind of a lifetime assignment that she, I would suppose, would have been striving for and was kind of in awe that she was even handed that assignment.
Well, it was pretty much an accident.
Yes.
You know, she wouldn't have done it, although she had worked for 10 years for this travel magazine, the name of which was Velocity. Strange name for a travel magazine, but that's what they called it.
That's what they called it.
She really wasn't sure about her chances for advancement. You know, she'd been there for 10 years. She never got to take these trips. It was always her boss.
It was her boss.
To get the perks to go on the cruises right. and to visit the new hotels in faraway places and yada, yada, yada. But her boss was pregnant. and could not go on this trip. This was the maiden voyage of the Aurora Borealis.
It was.
It had just been christened and was about to set on its maiden voyage. And there were a number of people on in the various cabins of different import. We'll talk about those as we go along here today. But it was the maiden voyage. It was the first time out. And obviously there were some travel writers there. And the owner was hoping for some good pub.
Yes.
You know, good publicity in the travel magazine so he could sell some future charter trips on his cruise ship.
Future passengers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were a handful of, you know, those in her field, her peers that she knew and had some dealings with prior to.
Seemed to me about half and half of people who were somehow related to the travel field. They were either travel writers, like Laura was. By the way, her nickname is Lo. I'm not quite sure how you get Lo out of Laura. I mean, I see La or Lou, but there's no O in Laura. I don't know how she ever got that nickname. One of the things that baffled me.
I'd even forgotten that her real name was Laura. In my mind, she's Lo.
Yeah, well, at any rate, she was actually a writer. She was a travel writer. There was a travel photographer.
Right.
There was one of these guys who goes in for eating strange stuff in faraway places. There's a guy like, I don't know, he's on one of the cable channels.
Oh,
Discovery
that's on
Channel,
Anthony Bourdain, I think it is on CNN.
Yeah,
is that
goes,
who, yeah.
Yeah, he goes to places
and eats some, we'll call them exotic foods.
Yeah, he eats snakes and lizards and fish eyeballs and all that stuff. But anyway, they got one of those characters and some others. But the other half, it's about the other half, were super rich people who were potential investors in Lord Bulmer's private cruise operation. He was hoping to cajole them into helping to finance this whole operation. It never really said how much the ship cost. Obviously, it was millions of pounds.
Oh, obviously. Mm. It was quite the luxury liner, and he really invited. He was very selective in who he invited for that very reason.
This takes place, starts in England, and then for most of the rest of the novel, it takes place at sea, in the North Sea and the Baltic Sea. But it starts out in England because that's where Laura Blacklock works at this Velocity magazine. It's in London, in fact. It's where the magazine is based. It's where she lives.
It's where she has her flat.
Doesn't start out, however, with the cruise. It starts out with something else bizarre that happens to her. What's that, Kathy Klein?
It does. She actually is burglarized in her apartment, and her boyfriend, she has a boyfriend, I believe, I remember he is away in the Ukraine someplace. He's not in country. And she wakes up and she finds her apartment had been broken into.
Mm-hmm.
And from the very beginning, I got the sense that, of course, anybody that would have their apartment or their living quarters broken into would be a traumatic experience. But early on, I sensed there was something more, you know, with Lo that, and here I think she suffered from high anxiety or panic attacks or
something. It doesn't come out, though, until halfway through the book.
Yeah, and so that kind of escalates things for her.
Mm-hmm.
So it really starts out as a page-turner because this has happened.
Well, not only is she burglarized, but the guy's still there.
This is true,
The burglar is still in her flat.
Yeah. She wakes up to the noise. And at first she thought it was I think she had a cat. And at first she thought it was, you know, the cat doing what cats do.
Mm-hmm.
And then realizing that it wasn't. And I think, if I remember correctly, did he not come and turn the door handle or something on her bedroom door? And then something happened and he left.
She, it's quite a lengthy episode right at the beginning.
Yeah.
She's awakens terrified at what was that sound, that sort of thing. She finds out that the cat is in the bedroom, and she said, well, didn't I close the door? How could the cat get into the bedroom door? She's trying to remember. because she'd come home the night before drunk and collapsed into bed. And then she hears another noise, and she says, there's somebody out there. Gets up the courage to open the door, and the guy slams the door, slams the bedroom door into her face, cuts her cheek pretty badly, bruises her up, but then he locks her in the bedroom. He locks the door and takes the knob off and goes about his business, burglarizing her flat, and then he leaves. And she finally gets out. As I said, this is quite a lengthy prelude.
It is, yeah.
Pries open the door eventually and runs to see an upstairs neighbor and so on and so forth. This all before we even get to who she really is or what she's about and so on and so forth.
The story definitely opens with action. Now, one of the things that I, for lack of any other word, saying humorous, is that when she goes to the neighbor because, and he had, she lost her telephone. Next, didn't he take, he took the telephone, or she couldn't find her telephone?
Well, he took her purse. It had the telephone in it.
Yeah.
And
so,
her wallet and all of her
cards. She goes to the neighbor to use the telly to call the police, and the neighbor officer offers her a cup of tea. And she sits down and has this cup of tea and finally says to her, well, the real reason that I came is that I need to use your telly to call the police. And I'm reading this, and actually, if you to put a real flavor on it, as you can see, David, I have the CD, the audio version that I was listening to, and certainly the narrator has the English accent, so it really puts a wonderful flair to the whole story in listening to it.
So it's pretty good, is it, the audio version?
It's actually quite entertaining. I don't usually do audios. Well, I read the book like 6 months ago, and I was doing a little refresher, and I thought, well, I'll do the audio. Audios, not to insult the audios, but most times when I'm read to, it lulls me to sleep. And that, so I like to have the book and, you know, and I read it. But I'm finding this was quite entertaining, only because of the narrator and the reading and just the emotion and everything that she puts into it.
Well, let's do a little sidebar here, because I'm not an audiobook person. I've never listened to a book, an audio version of a book. I have friends who do, and I know for people who are in the car a lot, long distances, it's great if you're going on a 2 or 3 hour trip. It's superb. But in this particular book, Laura Blacklock Lowe is the narrator. So a young English woman would be fine, but how do they handle the other conversations
still,
with all the men?
Does
she speak for the men too, or is it a male voice?
No, she does, and know the voice, it fluctuates, and you can tell it's the same voice. It's just they put a different pitch to it and stuff. You know, even down to the police and the neighbor and the men. So
because most of the other characters are men,
yes,
and there's a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
There is also a lot of internal monologue with Laura that would be well suited to the audio book.
Yeah.
I found some of that a little, it went on too long in the book version,
Yeah, you just want to
internal thinking. Get to the action here, come on.
Yeah.
Cut to the chase.
Yeah, sometimes you just wanted to kind of be able to go out and reach her and say, okay, come on, move on.
I'm wondering how they'll be able to do that if CBS indeed goes ahead with this option to make a TV movie out of it, how they'll deal with that, because they almost have to have a narrator here to convey her inner thoughts, because so much of the book, that's what it is.
Well, and a lot of times I think whenever you have a book or story that is very entertaining to read, and whenever they go to put it into movie form, it's not unusual, and I think this is why we hear so many comments that people say, well, it didn't follow the book. It didn't do this, it didn't do that. Well, and there's a reason, because I think, this certainly is just my personal opinion, that when you're reading, you can actually read what your character is thinking and feeling, because the author is telling you this, and you know. But when you put it on the screen, you can't read your character's thoughts and minds. So they have to really kind of relay all of that in action that you see on the screen.
Or have a narrator.
Yeah, well.
Give a little bit of interior dialogue.
Yeah, I suppose they could.
I don't know whether you could do that for the whole movie or not. I'm not sure that, I don't know. I won't pass judgment in advance, but yeah. I would think this would be a tough, well, maybe not in this day and age, because today some of the best movies that are being made are, in fact, for TV. You know, if you go back 10, 20 years, TV movies were, you know, they were kind of cheap, quite frankly. They didn't compare at all with a major theatrical release.
What was that in the theater?
In terms of sets and costumes and big-name stars, for that matter.
Right.
Nowadays, you're just as likely to see the big names and the big sets and everything in a TV movie.
In TV as you would in the theater.
Especially in some of the subscription, you know, Netflix, Amazon, and so
on. Well, and I think, too, that that reflects maybe on the quality of the service that you get now on TV, that you can, you know, watch and the quality of the movie as far as producing it and everything is sometimes bit as good as what you would see at the theater.
And a lot of the theatrical stuff is now aimed at teenagers, you know, and
it's
young
true.
Adults. It's comic book stuff, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
How many Batman movies have there been? 20?
Spider-Man.
That might be on the low side. I'm not sure. Well, anyway, no movie yet for this, but perhaps there will be from CBS. The book we're discussing is called The Woman in Cabin 10. It's a novel. It's about a year old, published by English writer Ruth Ware, whose previous novel, this is her second novel, her previous was a New York Times bestseller. It was called In a Dark, Dark Wood. Also a murder mystery from what I read, although I've not actually seen or read that book. Okay, so she's burglarized at her flat in London. She calls her work at the magazine, says, I won't be in today. I got to, you know, whatever. I got to get my new bank cards. I got to get a new driver's license, all that kind of stuff you have to do. And the people at work say, well, do you want us to get somebody else to go on this trip? Because she was leaving, I don't know, like Sunday or Monday.
Oh, it was, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was in a couple of days. She said, oh, no. I want, because this she thought was her big chance.
Yes.
To not only enjoy a week-long cruise, but to perhaps, you know, score big with some articles and chance for advancement and so on and so on and so forth. So even though she was somewhat injured.
She was.
And psychologically scarred, although we didn't know that yet. She said, no, I'm going. I'm going. She was not a particularly likable character in many ways, this Laura Blacklock, our narrator, our heroine of this movie. She had a lot of flaws. Number one, she was an alcoholic. She drank all the time. I found that a little bit unbelievable, but maybe that's just because I've never been around people like that.
Mm-hmm.
At the drop of a hat, she had a drink. It was like watching the soap operas on TV, you know, where they, that's all they do. It doesn't matter whether it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever, they have a scotch or whatever. But she, I mean,
she did.
She drank all the time.
Yeah, I think probably that she would be referred, what they, some of the phrase that I've heard before is a functioning alcoholic, that, you know, she drinks, she has that addiction, but she was still able to function. And in fact, she probably functioned better when she had alcohol in her system.
But she also, and we don't learn this until she has vague references to pills whenever she eventually goes on this yacht, a couple of other times. But it's halfway through the book before we find out that she has been prescribed for many, many years with antidepressants.
Yeah, and that ultimately comes out because, if I'm remembering correctly, comes out because of what happens on the cruise, and they start questioning the validity of what she is saying, so they start investigating, so to speak, her character.
And the guy, the security guy, whatever he is on the boat, sees her antidepressant medication there. He sees a wastebasket full of miniature bottles of booze.
Yes.
And he says in so many words, what the heck are you doing? Alcohol and antidepressant drugs don't mix. bad enough that she's a drunk.
Yeah.
But she's doing it with taking pills all the time, too. As I said, not perhaps the most likable character.
Yeah. I would think that most of the time through this story, her head was a little fuzzy. I would think.
Almost have to be.
Yeah, I would think so.
She also didn't sleep much.
She did not.
I didn't find that believable. I don't know about you.
Well, I don't. Yeah, I don't.
I mean, she'd sleep for 2 hours and then she'd be up and go through another day.
Yeah. Well, I know some folks, if you get on, a real high anxiety that you can't, settle down in your nervous system, that's possible. But I don't know the length of time that it went on for her. You might go 2-3 days at the max that you have, very little sleep, that you just can't settle down and get into some good restful sleep. But I don't know how many, but it seemed to be it was most of the cruise for her that she was running on 2 or 3 hours of sleep.
Yeah, as I said, I didn't.
Yeah.
There were some plot holes in this that disturbed me. Hey, my theory is if you're going to write a mystery, and you expect me to play along here, suspend my disbelief, it better be a crackerjack. There better not be a lot of holes in this mystery, or I'm not going to buy it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do understand that, but I enjoyed the story only because of the twists and the turns, and just when you think, it has to be, and then something else pops up, and it's like, huh, I guess not. So you're turning the page to find out, what's going on.
What a good mystery does. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's Laura, or Lo, Blacklock. She's, by the way, 32 years old.
Yeah.
So she's a young, younger generation journalist, as I said.
And she really wasn't at a good place in her life because, I know that, we talked about, her drinking and the depression that she had suffered. And then the boyfriend's over in Ukraine, and they didn't have the best of relationships at the time when this story took place.
He's from New York. He's a native of Brooklyn. His name is Judah. Unusual name. Judah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Judah Lewis is his name. And he wants to get back to America, and he wants them to get married.
Yes.
And he wants her to come back with her, and she says no. So on top of everything else, she's smashed in the face with a door by the burglar. She's scared to death. She's drinking too much. She's taking pills. And now she breaks up with her boyfriend. All of this the day before she goes on a week-long luxury cruise.
Yeah, you could say probably within, a 36-hour period all this happens.
I was surprised that she didn't put her in a car wreck or something before. What else is going to happen to her?
She really put her in a stressful situation.
That's
and then
true.
She throws her on this luxury liner, and it doesn't get any better.
Let's talk about some of the people that are on board this, because most of this novel takes place on this ship.
It does.
This luxury yacht. Which I think is a better description than a cruise ship, although it does cruise. The plan was to sail north from England. They didn't sail from London. She took a train somewhere up along the coast of the North Sea, because they were going to Norway.
Oh, that's right.
And they were going to go up the coast of Norway to see the Northern Lights. It was it's the fall of the year, September, I think. It looks like the weather's right for the Northern Lights. It's pretty cold up there. Near the Arctic Circle, and that's what they were hoping to see.
And of course, it wasn't to be a long trip.
No, it was a week, yeah. And they were all going to fly back from somewhere in northern Norway, Tromsø or Bergen or somewhere up there. So that was the plan. The people on the ship, in addition to Laura, first thing she sees is another writer that she knows, Ben Howard, who writes for another travel magazine, happens to be her ex-flame.
I was going to say,
ex-boyfriend.
Yes, they had a past relationship,
And apparently it was more than a couple of dates going to the movies.
I got that impression.
They were an item,
Yeah, I did. I got that impression, too.
Mm-hmm. However, they had not parted well. It doesn't say exactly how, at least in the beginning, but the breakup was not amicable.
Yeah, I have to admit, once she got to the ship and all these other characters started being introduced and some where she had, you know, known them prior or before and all the dialogue. I found it a little confusing keeping track of who's who.
I had to write them down. There were 10 cabins. Some of the cabins had two people, a man and a wife. Some just a person. One was empty. And then there was all the crew people and so on and so forth. It was too many for me to keep straight.
Yeah.
But that's, Agatha Christie did that as well.
She did.
You know.
Yeah.
10 Little Indians would be the classic example. There were 10 major characters that you had to keep track of, at least at the beginning.
At the beginning, that's right.
They kept being knocked off as you went along. Well, that doesn't happen in this book. We're not giving you any spoiler there. What does happen is that she knows some of these people closely, obviously Ben Howard, an ex-boyfriend. And some of the others she knows to say hello.
She would know the name because of the industry, yeah.
Tina West was another, was like a pretty high-up travel writer for some rival magazine.
I got the impression that she would be, you know, kind of like on the same level with what Lowe's boss would be.
Yeah, you know, certainly a generation older.
Yeah.
And more, she wasn't just a writer. She was an editor of some sort. There's a photographer, a travel photographer. His name is Cole Lederer. His wife, I think, was with him. Is that right? No, he's the one who is, he said, my ex-wife is back home with her new boyfriend or something like that.
Yeah.
But he was kind of a weird character. He was a travel photographer. Then there was Alexander Bellholm. He was the guy who goes to faraway places and eats goofy, weird foods. Straight out of the Discovery Channel.
He was not one of my favorite characters.
There was another, and I, you know, there were several places in this book where, you know, the author was trying to be so modern, you know, because these characters are right out of American TV. Archer Fenlon, I can't read my own writing. Fenlon, yeah, he was an extreme travel guy. He would go to these places, another show on TV, I don't know, it's History Channel or Learning Channel or something, where this guy goes all over the world and tries to find, you know, this is where Moses got the Ten Commandments.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so they got that guy on there.
So these are all world travelers in one way or another,
She knows some of them. Some of them she knows by reputation.
Yeah.
And then there are, as I mentioned earlier, almost the other half are potential investors. They're super rich English people. Mm-hmm. The owner of the ship, the owner of the yacht, Lord Bulmer, is trying to convince to invest millions of pounds into his operation. And they include people like Owen White. I felt like by this stage of the game, I felt like I was playing Clue, you know?
And I should have been smart like you.
Professor Plum in the ballroom with a lead pipe.
I should have been writing all this down while I was reading it. I'm not. I wasn't doing that, and you were smart in doing that.
My head was spinning. I had to. There was Lars Jensen and his wife Chloe, another potential investor, who were there, and there was one other super rich guy too. And then, of course, there was Lord Bulmer's. Lord Richard Bulmer's wife.
Yeah. She was a character all unto her. I mean, there were certain characters that she expanded upon, I thought, on that. And obviously maybe plays a more intricate role in the storyline. A
couple of things that were important. First of all, it turns out that Lord Bulmer was not rich on his own. His wife was. She was some kind of a Scandinavian heiress to, like, billions of whatever money. Anne was her name. So she's a rich heiress. That's where he got all his money. The other thing was that she was a breast cancer. She was very sick.
She was. Yeah. You didn't find that out until, about halfway through when you started introducing the characters and different things.
Well, I guess when they had that opening night dinner, when they
left early. Yeah.
Well, she was there, and you know the description of her is she's practically white.
Yeah.
She's wearing a babushka around her head. Her eyebrows are gone. Obviously, she was undergoing some sort of chemotherapy. and she was not well. I mean, she could barely walk. She was wearing a shawl and a kind of a kimono-like gown.
Yeah, that's very fragile. Hmm.
Yes, perfect word.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And she did, because she did excuse herself. Am I remembering? She excused herself early.
Wasn't feeling well. Wasn't going to stay for the dinner. She stuck around for the social hour, you know, where everybody was having some champagne or whatever, except for our heroine, who had four or five of them.
Well, I guess she wasn't bashful when it came to that, was she?
What bothered me more than anything else was she knew that she got these horrible hangovers.
Yes.
So why would she do it? And here she is on the opportunity of a lifetime career-wise.
Right.
She wants to knock out a couple of good stories, get some good interviews, and she's getting bombed on the first night.
Yeah. I think that would probably be the ultimate question for, you know, anyone who suffers with that affliction. You know, why do you do it? And for whatever reasons. I don't know what her reason was, but she continued to do it. Maybe she thought she was going to be able to drown out all of that was going on, or help her make some of the decisions that she needed to make, or she couldn't handle the stress of her life at the time. I don't know.
The other thing was, and I saw more than one social media commentator, there's a lot of social buzz on this book, who said, this is a direct copy from the Girl on the Train book, where the protagonist is drinking all the time and becomes an unreliable narrator, so you never know whether to believe her or not because she's bombed out of her mind all the time.
I did not see that on social media, and I haven't read anything, you know, the comparison. But I can tell you halfway through the book, I had this nagging feeling, why does this story feel familiar to me? And it's exactly that. And although I did not like that, so I like that story, but I didn't find it as entertaining as this one.
I would agree with you 1,000%. I don't know. Maybe I'm sounding a little negative here. This was a good mystery. It wasn't the best I've ever read, but I enjoyed it. I did not enjoy The Girl on the Train. I slogged my way through that book only because we were reading it for book talk, and I had to.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I wouldn't have finished it. I didn't think it was very good. I know it was extremely popular. I understand this. I know they made it into a movie.
And they made it
broke all kind
movie.
Of box office records.
And I didn't see the movie, so
I didn't
I don't
want
know.
To. I hated the book.
I thought it was much darker. The book was much darker than what this one is.
I don't like, and this is being done a lot now
and
by novelists. And they even have a name for it. It's called unreliable narrator. I was not aware of this till I was reading some of the critiques of Girl on the Train. Unreliable narrator. Another recent novel, extremely popular, that uses this is Gone Girl.
Yes.
Gillian Flynn. Gillian? Is it Gillian Flynn?
Yes, Flynn,
And I don't want to invest, whatever, 7 or 8 hours into reading a book, and I'm trying to keep track of stuff, and then I find out that the narrator is not reliable, and everything the narrator said is untrue. Well, you're wasting my time. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But I got other things to do with my life than to read a whole book and find out that the narrator is unreliable.
And some of the things that I find in some of the stories that I have read, and certainly a few that we've just mentioned, that when you start out, and maybe it's just because I'm old-fashioned, but when I start out reading a book and you do have your main character that has character flaws, you know, we all have them. But I like by the end of the book, I like that character to recognize that flaw and maybe improve upon it, you know, so that they better themselves. And I'm not finding a lot of that in the stories that I'm reading. I'm just going to say probably in the past, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5 months.
Well, Gone Girl and then Girl on the Train, which, by the way, I don't remember. Did you and I review that book? I don't know which library was here.
I don't know if we did or not.
There was some theory there that the author called that The Girl on the Train because of the great success of Gone Girl. They wanted "girl" in the title, even though it was not a girl on the train. It was
a woman.
It
was. You're right. It was
so
a woman.
So I said, "Nah, you know, what are you trying to fool here?"
Who she was right smack, kind of in the middle of the same dilemma as what our gal here. Only she had. It was an ex-husband with the girl on the train. It was an ex-husband, and he had already moved on and remarried and everything, you know. But kind of the same emotional dilemma that the character has.
Now, in this book, we have, first of all, I don't think this is an unreliable narrator. Although our damsel in distress, Laura Blacklock, has times where she doubts what she's seen because she's been inebriated or extremely exhausted or petrified. Yeah. I found that understandable. And this is not an unreliable narrator book, so don't worry about that if you can't stand that like me. However, to me at least, you tell me if I'm wrong, Kathy Klein.
Oh, I would never tell you if you're wrong, David.
The title is deceiving. In just the opposite way
exactly
as the girl on the train, because in The Girl on the Train, it wasn't a girl, it was a woman. The title of this book is The Woman in Cabin 10, and it wasn't a woman in Cabin 10, it was a girl.
It was a girl.
So I'm bummed about this when I find this out at the end. Tell it like it is.
I know.
In your title.
Well, maybe The Girl in Cabin 10 would not appeal to adult fiction readers. It would may sound more like maybe a young adult. You know, the
but
girl
this is
in
an
cabin
English
two.
Mystery. A lot of
I
lot
know
of,
it.
Lot of,
yeah, I know. I don't know why The Woman in Cabin 10.
A lot of us baby boomers like English mysteries. We don't need it to be a girl.
Exactly. So The Woman in Cabin 10. So I can't remember how old was this woman girl.
Well, this is where I was having my doubts. I thought maybe I was coming down to, you know, this is where. It's, 11:30 at night, and I'm trying to finish the book, and I'm getting a little grouchy, and I'm saying, maybe I'm coming down too hard on this. I began to doubt myself as to the first time that Lo sees the person in the next... Lo's in cabin 9. This woman slash girl is in cabin 10. I'm thinking, well, maybe I'm not remembering that correctly, but I had the impression that when... She knocked on the door to borrow a...
Mascara.
Yes. Yeah, I thought it was lipstick, but something. It was some kind of cosmetic. She knocked on the door, and the door opens, and I thought she described this person as a girl. She was wearing a Pink Floyd T-shirt.
Yeah. And maybe that was what was deceiving, because she actually labeled it Pink Floyd. I don't know what gave the impression. I never got the impression that it was a girl.
Well, I mean, I didn't think
I
it was
I got the impression
was...
maybe it was a young woman.
Yeah, okay. But, I mean, I didn't think 14 or 15. I thought 25, you know.
Well, that's a woman.
Maybe I'm coming at this from a guy's standpoint. Maybe I'm all wet.
Maybe we should have read The Young Woman in Cabin 10.
Probably too long. What should a mystery do? This is a book talk, by the way, if you're just joining us. The book we're discussing is about a year old. It's an English murder mystery, and it's called The Woman in Cabin 10. Cabin 10 is it's a cabin on a luxury yacht, or a tin cabin, as a matter of fact. I forget what I was saying before that. What are the good components of a mystery, at least for me? You got to have a couple of red herrings in there, right?
Yep.
Where you're getting all kind of clues that...
And you're thinking, you're figuring it out.
Somebody is the bad guy or the bad girl, and they're not. There's some good red herrings in here.
Yes. Yeah.
One of them I thought was too obvious with, she kept painting Ben Howard, her former boyfriend. I mean, every other paragraph, that bum, you know, and I'm thinking, don't be so obvious. I know it's not going to be him, okay?
Yeah, I thought that too, that, yeah, okay, well, you know what, just move on from Ben, because we know it's not him. You know, you're dwelling on him too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You also knew that Laura was going to survive, obviously.
Sure.
She's the narrator, she's the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, if she's killed in the end, who's telling the story?
Who's telling this? That's very true.
So does that ruin it for me? Heck no. No, I was still...
Because you want to find out who did it and what it was that they did.
Well, was there in fact a murder? I mean, I think that's the plot twist that she does best with, you know.
Yes.
She is certain that someone was murdered in the cabin next to her, cabin 10, and they can't find anybody missing from the boat.
That's what she kind of strikes out, you know, to prove and to find. But there again, she's already doubting herself because of just things in her life. So now this young woman that's next door to her, she's there, she isn't there. And she thinks she's kind of losing her mind a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, no wonder she drinks too much and she's taking antidepressants all the time. She has not. She just has to take
not
a couple. She's got blister packs of these things laying all over the place.
Not to mention she got seasick, too, for like the first 24 hours.
Hey,
I
understand that depression is a serious thing. And this woman, it's not treated lightly here. I mean, she had counseling and so on when she was a kid. Right. But it's actually, technically, it's more anti-anxiety pills that she's taking as opposed to antidepressants. But they're still, don't mix these things with alcohol, for goodness sake.
You don't mix it. That's absolutely, and she was ignoring that.
Yeah. So obviously she's going to be wondering whether or not.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think that her brain, I think the whole way through this story, maybe other than toward the very end, was probably just a little fuzzy the whole way through the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she is certain that someone was murdered in the cabin. And as I said, this, I think, was the gem of the plot for author Ruth Ware, because then you're not sure for the bulk of the novel whether or not there really was anybody killed.
Or is your main character, your narrator, is she just really having some psychological issues?
Am I going to get to the end of this book and it's another unreliable narrator? I'm going to throw this book out the window, if that's what it turns out to be. It does not turn out to be that way, I'll tell you that much. But it was a good plot twist. However, I told you there were some holes in this plot, at least for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I go at these mysteries too analytically.
I read them for a mystery. I read for pure entertainment.
You don't go back and forth? You don't go say, what was that 50 pages ago? And you're going to go flipping back
the
hump?
Well, sometimes I do. If it's very blatant, I do. Yeah, wait a minute here. Yeah.
I grew up reading, not growing up, but actually when I was in school, when I should have been studying, I was reading Nero Wolfe mysteries. Nero Wolfe and his faithful assistant, Archie Goodwin.
Yeah.
Rex Stout, yeah. I don't know. He wrote like 90 of these Nero Wolfe mysteries. I'm serious.
Not exaggerating. He did, absolutely.
And
they weren't real long stories either.
No, you could sit down and read them in, 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But he always tied up every single plot. There were no plot holes in Rex Stout.
I do like that at the end. There's no dangling
participles.
Yeah, that too. Yes.
So tell me this: the reason that Laura, is positive that there was a murder committed during the middle of the night, by the way, in the cabin next to hers, is that she wakes up in her cabin. She says, I heard a woman scream.
Mm-hmm.
She's still not. She's disoriented because naturally she had gone to bed drunk and taken pills, and then she thought she heard the sound of the sliding glass door in the cabin next to her opening. They open out onto balconies that look out on the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then I heard a splash.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a little splash. I'm paraphrasing here, but it's pretty close. It wasn't just a little splash. It was a splash that a body makes when it's tossed off the balcony into the sea.
And of course, when you read that, you can hear it.
Yeah, but my question is, she couldn't hear it. She's in bed with her windows shut. She refers constantly throughout the book of the hum of these engines.
That's
of these,
true.
Right?
Yeah,
every
that
page.
Is true.
Oh, the engines were humming and the ship was jumping back and forth. Here's a ship. She talks once about the wake of the ship. Ever see the wake of a yacht? It's a big bubbling wake. It makes noise. You got the engines making noise. She's going to hear a body fall off into the ocean?
Well,
that's nonsense.
You have to remember, she said she only got, she's only been on 2 or 3 hours of sleep, here and there. So
she could have been
maybe she was awake.
She could have been wearing 5 hearing aids and she wouldn't have heard a body. But it wouldn't make any sound that you could hear from. I mean, it drops off the down 2 decks, crashes into the sea, you got the engines humming, you got the waves crashing around. She hears a body. I'm sure it was a body.
She's sure it was a body.
I thought that was a plot hole that needed fixed up somehow.
Yeah.
She should have gotten up out of bed, opened the door, and okay.
But she didn't do that right away, did she?
Well, that's what I say. How could she hear it?
Yeah, she did. Well, and then, too, another thing that you have to throw in this mix, that by the time she gets to that part in the story, okay, this is a woman who still is, we'll say, trying to recuperate from being burglarized back home. So she's dealing with a great trust factor on a lot of things, too. And so some of the things, if I remember correctly, some of the times whenever you'd be reading when she was wakening up from one of these 2 or 3 hour naps, that she was like thinking, was she back at her apartment, you know, or she, you know, she was, then she'd realize that she was on the cruise. So there were a lot of confusion, but then again, her brain would be fuzzy because not only of the alcohol, but the anti-anxiety medications that, you know, she had been taking.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so it's true. No, you're absolutely right. It's true. So how would you know? Oh, it sounded like a body.
What? Have you heard a lot of bodies pushed off the balcony of a ship in your life? Do you have anything to compare it to?
Very true.
I thought it was a hull, you know. We won't get into the end of this book because, heaven's sakes, it wouldn't be a mystery if you're inclined
Correct.
To read it, you know. And, hey, folks, it's a good mystery.
It really is.
You know.
Very entertaining.
I do this to movies. Sometimes go to see a good movie, and after the movie, you go for coffee or whatever, and I just rip it apart, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even though sometimes it's a great movie, but, you know.
Sure.
Well, I like this, I didn't like that, you know.
Yeah, but it was entertaining.
I wanted to, I like to give a little sample of writer's work whenever we're reviewing a book. This, I'm just going to read a couple of sentences here. She's a good writer, by the way. She's very descriptive.
The story, and she was very descriptive, and she kept the story moving. Whether you liked what your character was doing or not, the story kept moving forward.
She's describing, this is the opening night reception. They're all on the ship for the first time, mm-hmm. this luxury yacht. They're having like a social hour with drinks before their opening dinner. And she is looking around the room. And she's talking with Ben, who's her former boyfriend, who happens to be there too. And he says something like, the guys all look particularly well-fed. And then they gaze around the room together, and they'll pick up the writing. I had to agree with him when it came to the men. There was a little knot of them in the far corner who looked like they could survive for several weeks off their reserves if they were ever shipwrecked. The women. Ah, different story, though. They all had that lean, polished look that spoke of hot yoga and a macrobiotic diet. And they didn't look like they'd survive for long if the ship went down. Maybe they could eat one of the men. that was a great paragraph, you know. There's a lot of sarcasm in there, a lot of satire, very descriptive writing. Pretty good stuff. Yeah, pretty good stuff. Just fix the plot hole, will you, about the body. noise of the body. And by the way, we're not giving away anything that whenever she tries to convince the security officer and so on the ship, they say, there's nobody missing. How could anyone have been murdered? Everyone's accounted for. All the guests are here. Mm-hmm. They check. Everybody's there. They take her down to the living quarters for the crew, the wait staff, and so on and so forth. None of them look like this person that she saw whenever she borrowed the mascara.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He took her around to see if she could identify who she saw.
And there's nobody missing. And she's, I'm positive there was somebody in that room. What do you think? I'm nuts. And so they say, okay, well, let's go look. So they go. He gets the passkey, opens the room. It's empty.
It's empty, yeah.
Nobody in there.
Yep.
The bed is stripped.
Cabin 10 is empty.
She had seen clothes strewn all over the place, suitcases. Mm-hmm. This woman/girl's cosmetics all over the counter. It's all gone.
She saw it occupied.
And no, now nobody she is, there.
And now she's seeing it completely empty. And did they not mention that whoever was supposed to be in there canceled
That's
at
right.
the last minute?
It was one of the big money investors that had been invited along with these other investors I was talking about. But at the last minute, he canceled. I forget what it was. I've got sick or something, whatever. Yeah. But he canceled. So that cabin was not, there was nobody in there. At least that's what they said.
That's what they said. That's right.
And therein lies the mystery.
That's right.
Was
absolutely.
There anybody in there? Or
was
wasn't
there ever anybody in there, or was it just a figment of her imagination?
Mm-hmm.
But then where did she get the mascara from? Because she still had the mascara.
That's true. Yeah. Well, up until the point where she left it out in her room, and the maid staff threw it away.
Yep.
Remember that?
Yep, and it disappeared.
She said,
yeah.
That was my only link to reality. Well, mm-hmm. the only way I could prove there was somebody in there.
Yeah.
Of course, everybody else said, well, how do we know that somebody gave you that?
Well, that's right.
Could have brought it yourself. You probably did.
No, she forgot hers. That's why she knocked on cabin 10 and asked to borrow mascara.
Love the cover, by the way.
Yes.
This woman, our main heroine, had anxiety problems, which I think a lot of people could relate to because a lot of it happened in the middle of the night.
Yes.
She would wake up. She was scared in the dark. A lot of people are, you know, yeah. scared in there. A lot of people use a nightlight.
Mm-hmm.
Some kids, some adults, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There are some dark places where she goes. That scares most people, I think.
If you're claustrophobic, where she was at, would create some problems.
And she's on a ship. I've never been out in the open sea in a small, I mean, this was a luxury yacht,
right.
but it wasn't a rowboat, but
right.
it wasn't a big cruise ship either.
No.
You know, with 18 decks and 5,000 people. I've never been out on the open sea in a boat like this. She gave good descriptions of how it really moves around in the high waves.
Mm-hmm.
I get a little queasy just reading about some of her descriptions.
I don't think I would want to go on that boat.
I don't think I would either.
I'm just saying. Yeah.
Especially with some of those weirdos on it.
Well, that's true, too. And where could you go to hide from them, you know? Nowhere. It makes you wonder if she herself, Ruth Ware herself, had not experienced, you know, in life, in her own life, a similar experience, to be able to write, mm-hmm. you know, so perfectly about it.
Good point. This is a relatively young woman. I'm looking at her picture, and we have the same book. Oh, you have the audio book.
I have the audio book.
Yeah, I would guess she's about, I don't know, what, 35, 40 maybe?
Well, there is a little picture
in hard
the
for me to hard for me to guess the ages of people when I look at them.
I would think
40?
Yeah, I would say somewhere around 40.
Yeah. Ruth Ware grew up in Sussex on the south coast of England. After graduating from Manchester University, mm-hmm. she moved to Paris, then returned to the UK. She worked as a teacher of English as a foreign language and a press officer. Ah, she was a journalist. And she now lives in London with her husband and her two small kids. Oh, small kids, so she must be in her 30s. Anyway, her name is Ruth Ware. A cautionary note. If you are offended by strong language, this book would not be for you. Our hero, Laura Lowe Blacklock, swears like a drunken sailor.
She does.
So if that kind of harsh language offends you, then you won't enjoy this book.
And you definitely don't want to listen to the audio.
Well, you know, this is a woman in her, what is she, age 32, young English woman. I suppose she was trying to make her sound like a lot of young English women talk these days.
So. And not only that, I think it conveyed, you know, the stress that she was under.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know a lot of people who are, you know, they're very strong people of faith, and they don't mind reading a book that has some tough language in it, but I just want to warn you.
Exactly.
It's a little graphic in this book.
Yeah, because if you are offended by it, you certainly probably don't want to pick this one up to read it.
The Woman in the Cabin 10. Now, do you have those audiobooks in the library as well?
Sure.
Those audio versions? So people can check that out in addition to the book, huh?
Absolutely. Okay. I find it, like you said, the language is still there. The audio book is actually narrated by Emma Jean Church, and she's an actress.
Mm-hmm.
She has done many narrations of audiobooks, and she's done film and commercials, and very gifted, very talented. And if you listened to the story, as you had asked earlier about the male voices and everything, and that she does change up her voice, that you definitely know it's a male, but you still know that it's her.
Mm-hmm.
So that she actually changes into that different character.
Good pick, Kathy Klein, and the folks at North Trails. I'll give you the book if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Putting that back on the book truck to go to whichever library it belongs. I'm not sure.
I think it goes home with me.
Oh, well, no problem. Yeah. Hey, good to see you.
Good to see you. Thank you, David.
Yeah. Good to read an English murder mystery once in a while.
Yeah.
More to come on It's Your Turn. We're going to be talking about the wonderful Butler Township Preston Park on the next segment of the program. John Stagno is here to give us a review. And, I've got to ask a little bit about the history, too, now, because this park has been the property of Butler Township for, I'm guessing, 5 years, maybe longer. I don't know. John will be with us in just a couple of minutes. Stick around. More to come here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We will be right back.
Your pet is loved. Your pet is a member of your family. So when your pet dies, your pet deserves respectful care. If you choose cremation, which so many have, consider the impeccable, sensitive, local service provided by Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller. Here's our pledge. Your pet will be cremated individually in our impeccable facility here in Butler. We assure you that the cremains are assuredly your pets and your pets alone. Before you make your decision, ask how other facilities perform. Individual cremation? It's an important and sensitive question. Bring your pet to us or we'll come to your home. When the time comes, tell your veterinarian that you prefer Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller. He's a pet parent, too. Call us, 724-287-3707, 287-3707, or www.butlerpetcremation.com. Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller.
Let the Musicians Concert Band take you around the world with this very special concert. Hi, this is Jimmy Ciprian, voice of the band, along with conductor-director Jeff Kroner, have selected a wide variety of music from around the world, including the Italian Polka, Florentine March, and the Russian Sailor's Dance. The concert takes place Thursday, July 27th, 7:30 p.m. at the Butler Intermediate High School. That's Thursday, July 27th, 7:30 p.m. at the Butler Intermediate. See you there.
Are you looking for a new pharmacy after hearing news of Kmart closing? Celebrating 10 years of pharmacy care to the Butler community, locally owned Institute Hill Pharmacy can fill your prescriptions in just 10 minutes. We take all major insurance plans, stock a variety of over-the-counter medications, and pride ourselves on fast, friendly customer service. And we are excited to offer a $5 off coupon for any transferred prescription from Kmart customers. Some restrictions apply.
Check out Institute Hill Pharmacy on Facebook or stop by their location on East Jefferson Street.
Institute Hill Pharmacy. An old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember.
Welcome back, friends. Nice to have you with us on the program today, and nice to say hello to an acquaintance of some standing. Tony Stagno is here. Tony and I have talked in the past on a number of occasions about a wonderful mentoring group in our area, but we're talking today about Preston Park.
David, how are you?
Butler Township's Preston Park. I've been trying to think for the last couple of hours, knowing we were going to talk about this, just how long Butler Township has had possession of what we now know as Preston Park. I guessed about 5 years. Am I close?
You're pretty close. The township basically took it over about 2009.
Okay.
Jane Preston had passed on, and just a story that is told is that Jane called the commissioners in. And, well, first of all, she had offered it, I believe, to Western Pennsylvania Conservancy.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, this is wonderful. They said, well, we're going to sell it. And she said, oh, no, I don't want it sold. She said, I want the people, the community, to enjoy the park, to enjoy my home.
Mm-hmm.
So she canceled that deal, and she called in the commissioners. And she said to them, same deal. Would you like to have the property? And they said, yes. But then she put a stipulation. If you tell anybody, the deal is off. So for the longest time, till Jane's death, the commissioners had to keep it quiet. And the funny thing is that when she died, one of the former commissioners called one of the present commissioners and said, can I tell people now? So that's when it became fact. And in November 2010, the township held an open house to invite the community in. And then in the spring of 2011, we actually had our grand opening and turned the park over to the community. It was the last time I went through the park and left and could leave the gates open for the community. It was a different feeling when we left that day.
So it's actually a little bit longer than the 5 years ago.
Yes, that's right.
Although there's been continuing work. Just a little bit about the late Jane Preston. What a community servant. Of course, she was the widow of Dr. Frank Preston, the late Dr. Frank Preston, who was instrumental in the founding of Moraine State Park and the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy. He and some of his colleagues had the dream of recreating a glacial lake, which became known as Lake Arthur. I mean, this is all Frank Preston, in addition to his work, his professional work in glass research and so on. But at any rate, he and his wife, Jane, lived on, they had this rather sizable estate right in the middle of Butler Township.
My understanding is originally they lived on McCain Street, and Dr. Preston had his lab out on East Katanning Street heading towards West Butler.
I never knew that.
The other way around, West Katanning heading towards East Butler.
Mm-hmm.
But the trains would go by and ruin his experiments.
Huh.
So that's when he said, well, we're going to do this out in Meridian. And that's when he developed that idea. But that's and I have to tell you, Dave, I'm not an official tourist, a tour guide.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is I give tours at the park, but I do it out of enjoyment of what goes on out there. And I always tell people that what I'm telling you, I've learned from other people telling me. So even that story that I just shared with you, someone else could tell you, nah, he's not exactly correct. But that's the way I understand it.
Well, it's a rather large parcel. And for many folks, even I would imagine folks who live in the Meridian area, it was a bit of a mystery because the central part is all surrounded by a forest, by a wooded area, right? I mean, his lab building and his residence and so on and so forth was not really open to public view.
That's correct. There's five main buildings out there. And when we do tours out there, we actually take the public into four of them. We try to stay away from the pump house because there's so much mold in there, and it just isn't comfortable to mm-hmm. walk into it.
Mm-hmm.
But our tours that we do now take about 2 to 4 hours, depending upon how much talking I do, how many stories I share, how quickly the group moves with me. But we do a tour between 2 to 4 hours, and we actually go into all of the buildings that we can and give the history as we understand it.
Are there other volunteer, you're like a docent, a guide. Are there other volunteer guides like you, Tony?
The other gentleman, they're actually Dave Heltzel, who works with me as we call ourselves the coordinators or co-leaders of the Preston Park Volunteers. But I have to give Dave a big shout out. First of all, he does do does tours with me. But he also coordinates the Eagle Scout projects that go on out there. And if you've been out to the park, for example, we just recently constructed our first picnic shelter. It's not very large, but it was an Eagle Scout project.
Mm-hmm.
And as I always tell the community, members of the community, when they come out there, is look at the park, and we'll walk through, and I'll show you the improvements we've made. Because we have tried to be very careful with taxpayer money. So through a Day of Caring and through the Eagle Scouts and even through the Monday morning maintenance crew, We've done work, and the township has often just supplied the material. And, for example, today our crew was out there, and we put in about 2 hours of labor. And that's free labor.
So you have a group of volunteers that goes out and does, like, maintenance work every
yard
Monday?
Yard work. Every Monday, we call ourselves the Monday morning maintenance crew.
Hmm.
We meet at 9 o'clock in the parking lot. We kibitz a little bit. And then we basically go about our projects. Today, for example, we removed weeds. We cleaned the we power washed the compass rose, which is right in the middle of the park. We also repaired a fence, and we also mulched the trails. So in 2 hours, we did 4 projects.
Are most of these buildings that you talked about, these 5 buildings, are they kind of right in the center of the parcel, right in the center of the park?
Yes, that's right. They make up the Preston Way, I think is what Dave often calls it. The other part, as I said, Dave does tours, and Tom Menchak, who's a retired teacher,
we know Tom,
has also done tours. Actually, recently, Tom did a tour with members of Jane Preston's family, and they hadn't been on the ground. I believe it was his niece. I wasn't able to go. And I believe it was a niece of hers, and they were really impressed upon the improvements that we had done to the property. And they also expressed disappointment that they didn't get to know Frank and Jane better because of the history of what went on there at Preston Park.
There's a lake there, too. Isn't there a small lake?
There's actually two lakes. The one is actually we're having a problem with because the muskrats have started to drain it. So I don't know how we're going to solve that problem. The other part, the other lake, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the names off the top of my head, but the other pond, you can fish there. It's catch and release, but it's open to the public, and you can fish there. And it's kind of it's a beautiful place just to visit, especially for photography. I always say visit Preston Park and let nature surround you.
Do you know off the top of your head a ballpark figure how many acres is
about 88?
So it's big. It's a big place.
Park.
Yeah, are the woods, because there's tons and tons of woods, acres. Is that natural, or did Dr. Frank Preston plant different trees? You know, was it like an arboretum or something like that?
I'm sure that anyone who has been out there is familiar with the arboretum. It's a collection of evergreens, a big circle. It's always kind of neat to take people into that area. But there's vegetation there that you don't find in other parts of the area.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the prairie grass. Preston and Jennings are the only two places in western PA, I believe, where you can find prairie grass. The other thing is the metasequoia plant is a huge tree. It's a tree that is comes from China. And Dr. Preston, and I always tell people on my tour, if you were to go back 50 years ago, 60 years ago, before there were so many restrictions, it was probably easier to bring vegetation back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Preston had contacts all over the world, was able to say, hey, I like that. Can I have it? And people would give him plants, and he would bring them back, put them on his own property. As a matter of fact, we had a ranger come from Jennings one day, and he looked at a tree and said, that tree doesn't grow in Pennsylvania.
There's lots of activities that go on at the park. We want to talk about a couple of more of the improvements that are being made. These have been done as time permits and as money permits, because, quite frankly, the township was exceedingly grateful for this wonderful donation. But this is a huge park. This is 98 acres. And, you know, even to maintain it, to keep the grass cut, for goodness sakes, was going to be a sizable expense for Butler Township. So they rely on volunteers like Tony with us here and others. But they are making improvements. As Tony said, the Preston family recently visited. Very pleased to see the improvements that have been made so far. And I understand, and this is just new, I think within the past couple of weeks, they're applying for a grant now, the township commissioners, to put in restrooms at the park.
That's correct. The township is in the process of asking the public to comment. The Butler Township Board of Commissioners have approved the administration and preparation of a grant, and they're asking for construction of a restroom. And, Dave, if you've been to the park, it's one of our biggest problems.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we have is a porta-john. And they are in the process of finally moving forward to build a restroom facility. And the public is welcome to make comments. And if there are any comments, simply email the township or call Cheryl McNeil at the Butler Township office. And that phone number, if I may, Dave,
please,
mm-hmm. is 724-283-3430. And that's Cheryl McNeil. If you have any comments, Cheryl also can be reached via email. But the phone number, again, 724-283-3430. Just comments that any Butler Township residents might have about the grant to construct a restroom facility.
You mentioned the fact that you lead walking tours. Are these done on a regular basis? Are they done by appointment only? How do people get involved in one of these tours, Tony?
Good question, Dave. And actually, there's a couple different points here. First of all, I want to point out that the tours, as I said, can last from 2 to 4 hours, and it is walking. So if you come for a tour, be prepared to go into the woods and dress properly.
Mm-hmm.
We see all the buildings. And I want to say that we can do private tours. So, for example, if the staff here at the station would want to do a tour, we'll be glad to give you a tour of the facilities. And also, though, we are having three public tours. They are Wednesday, September 20th at 10 a.m., Saturday, October 7th at 10 a.m., and then one that I came up with, and that's over Thanksgiving weekend. And I thought, if you're having family come in, you're looking for something to do, so why not come out to the park, maybe mm-hmm. walk off some of the dinner? That's Saturday, November 25th at 10 a.m. Now, I want to point out that this year we tried to create tours. We did six this year. We'll be doing six. We tried to set them up instead of just doing Saturdays. We tried to get a daily one, and we had an evening one planned, but we got no response from the public. That was one of the reasons I wanted to come in today to tell people about our tours. And if you need information on that, you can, again, call 724-283-3430 and ask for Marcy. Marcy is works at the township, and she coordinates our tours. And, again, that's Wednesday, September 20 at 10 a.m., Saturday, October 7th at 10 a.m., and the Thanksgiving tour on Saturday, November 25th at 10 a.m.
There's some nice fall color there for a couple of those tours, won't there?
It'd be the best time to go. We did, as I said, we wanted to do an evening tour, but we just didn't get any interest in that.
The township went about this in a very painstaking way. They wanted to do this right. They contracted for a master plan for the future of this wonderful 98. Who has a 98-acre park right in the middle of their municipality? It's a wonderful opportunity, isn't it, Tony?
You know, the other thing about it, Dave, is that when the township got the Preston residence, it almost doubled the size of the recreation area because it abuts Butler Township Park.
Mm-hmm.
And the master plan, which was developed by Stromberg, Garrigan, and their associates in October of 2014, actually involves all both Preston Park, the Township Park, and Sawmill, where the ski development was. And one of their ideas, they had so many different ideas that I looked at, and at first some of them didn't make sense to me, but the more I go into the park, the more of interest they are. For example, one thing they suggested was the development of an amphitheater. And I think an amphitheater in Butler Township would be fantastic. I think it would add to the value of the properties.
Mm-hmm.
The other idea they had was to create structures in the woods. And it didn't make sense to me till they said, look, and I've seen people do this, where they'll walk into Preston Park and they'll stop at the residence. And they'll think, okay, I've done everything. But they don't realize how much more is out there. The Long Bridge, the Lilacs, the Skinny Bridge, the old railroad car, the rail line. So they won't go out. But the Garrigans suggested that we build a structure out into the woods, just as maybe some sort of statue that people would say, what is that? Let's go out and see what it is. And then, therefore, get people into the woods, create more physical activity, and get them to visit the rest of the area.
Was there once a rail line that went through that property?
I believe it was the Harmony Line.
Commuter trains that went from Butler to Pittsburgh.
Yes, I believe so.
I know that it went through Meridian,
right?
That's for sure.
What they've explained to me, because I'm not native to Butler,
mm-hmm.
what they've explained to me is the one road in Meridian that has the split in the middle.
I know
you know what I'm talking about.
Everybody asks, why is that road built like that? It used to be a railroad track,
it used
right?
to be a railroad track, and that actually came right through the Preston property in... We can show you where the embankment was. And when I give tours, I sort of like to paint a picture in people's minds and mm-hmm. try to say to them, this is what we think it looked like.
So this would have probably been even before Dr. Preston had purchased the property then, right?
Probably. Mm-hmm. I'll agree with you, Dave, because you're more of a historian.
Well, the tracks may have been there afterwards, but I think that rail service conked out in the late 1930s, I believe.
Okay.
It's too bad we still don't have it. Can you imagine? Oh. There were not one, but two lines that you could get on an electric trolley car in Butler and get off in Pittsburgh. Wow. Wow. We have to pause to check the midday lottery numbers. As Tony mentioned, one of the things that might be nice in the future would be an amphitheater somewhere in Preston Park. Well, they're already putting on shows there. In fact, there are a couple coming up that we want to tell you about, and we'll do that when we return after these words. Be right back. You're on It's Your Turn on WISR after this.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 5555. The pick three is 012012. The pick four, 9478. The pick five, 48961. The wild ball for each of those is 2. The treasure hunt is 5, 7, 14, 27, and 28. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $30,000.
Moving from my home of 50 years was a little scary, but I wasn't safe at home anymore, and my daughter with her busy life, children and grandchildren, it wasn't fair for me to expect so much from her.
We looked together to find a new home and discovered New Haven Court at Clearview.
What made the difference were the employees and the residents we met. The residents said it was a great place to live.
New Haven Court at Clearview, a great place to live because it's a great place to work. 888-261-5753 or visit IntegraCare.com.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Back, friends, we're talking about Preston Park, Butler Township's wonderful facility that came really almost out of nowhere due to the incredible bequest from the late Jane Preston, the widow of Dr. Frank Preston, who donated her estate, 88 acres, to Butler Township, with the stipulation that it be a public park.
That's correct.
Be open to the public. And there's no admission to get in?
No,
right?
Admission. The park is open 7 days a week, mm-hmm. and picnicking. As I said, let nature surround you.
There's only one entrance to Preston Park, right?
One entrance. And the other thing I want to say, Dave, before we go any further, is where it's located. Because so many people have said to me, where is it?
I got to tell you something. I've lived in Butler for a long, long time now. I drove past that entrance, I bet 500 times, without having any idea what was behind those black wrought iron gates, those big, tall wrought iron gates. I had no idea what that was.
Gates to a mansion that was never built.
Yeah.
And to get to Preston, it's on Eberhardt Road. And you simply, what I always tell people is go to Whitestown and turn at the ambulance center. Instead of going to the mall, mm-hmm. come the other direction, and we're more or less than a mile up the road. But
It's on the left-hand side.
It's on the left-hand side.
And the gates are still there, right?
Gates
big,
are still there.
Tall wrought iron gates.
They came from Ohio, and Dr. Preston wanted to build a mansion, and Jane said no. She was pretty. I think she must have. ruled the roost, and. She was pretty conservative. She didn't want to go for showy.
There's already been, even in the few years that this has been a township park, there have been special events there. And as Tony mentioned, hopefully sometime maybe an amphitheater there for performances. But the Hobnob Theater Company has done several shows there already, and they got another one coming up, right?
Hobnob Theater started 4 years ago through Phil Ball came on a tour and looked around, and he said, do you think we could do a play here? So I put him in touch with the right people because I don't have any authority. All I do is volunteer. So the Hobnob Theater has done Shakespeare in the Park for 4 years. The first year, and what they're doing this year is Twelfth Night. The first year they moved through the park. The second year they went all over the park. The third year they cut it down, and this year they're just going to be in one location. But the show dates, Dave, if I may, are Saturday, August 12th and Sunday, August 13th. And then again, Saturday, August 19th and Sunday, August 20th. All of those are at 6 p.m. Tickets will be, can be purchased. Excuse me, Dave. Tickets can be purchased at the location before the performance. They're $10 for 13 and older, and children 12 and under are free. And if your audience needs information, they can contact the Hobnob Theater Company at 412-736-2535 to find out how long the plays last. But the 12th night, is, as I said, that's what they're doing this year. They've been very pleased with the response from the public. The first year they did it on one weekend, and obviously it's worked so well that now they're doing it for two weekends.
Now that'll be in mid and late August, but there'll actually be performances there before that, because very quickly now, two original one-act plays by former Butler educator, director Don Orwald will be performing at Preston Park, and that's just around the corner, isn't it, Don?
Don Orwald contacted Dave Zarnick, who's a Butler Township commissioner, and said, you know, I'd like to do a play there. And I knew Don's reputation. I didn't know him. I believe he taught at NOC.
He did. Mm-hmm.
And last year he did a play, and this year for the, as I said, second year that they're doing this, he's doing The Blitzkrieg and the Bantam, which it deals with the creation of the Jeep by the American Bantam Car Works. And the other play he's doing is Monument Men. If you've seen the movie or know the story about them, he's dealing with the soldiers who were chosen to find and preserve the works of art stolen by the Nazis during World War II. So he's doing these two plays. He's doing those on Saturday, August 5th at 2 and 4 p.m., and then again on Sunday, August 6th at 2 p.m. And tickets for that, again, are $10 in advance, $12 at the gate. You can get those at www.eventbrite.com. And for both plays, for the Shakespeare in the Park and for Don Orwald, seating is not provided. So if you're attending, we recommend that you bring a chair or a blanket and bug spray. Mm-hmm. We don't want people, you know, getting bitten by anything. So if you're coming, come along, enjoy all the theater that's going to be going on there. But please be prepared for the weather or for the environment.
That's the first weekend in August. And by the way, Don Orwald, who lives in Texas now, will be back in Butler for that, and he'll be with us. We'll have him on the It's Your Turn program on Friday, August 4th. So he'll give you a lot more information about those two one-act plays. Sound very interesting, especially about the American Bantam Car Works here in Butler. It's good stuff.
They're actually bringing in antique cars to show during that play.
Yeah.
I'm sure Don will be telling you about that.
It's going to be a neat thing. And there's more to come even into the autumn. You got some activities that are planned. There's still a little bit in the planning stage, Tony, but there are some things going to happen out there in the fall.
The VNA will be doing, for the second year, a butterfly release. The date on that is Sunday, September 10th, and I believe they do that to honor, I believe it's cancer victims.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, yes.
And so they contacted Dave Zarnick, commissioner. Dave really compliments the park. He really pushes it on the public. He does a great job. But the VNA contacted him and said, we'd like to come out there. Excuse me. And they're coming on September 10th. And then annually, I said to you that we try to be very careful with what we do out there. And we've been very fortunate in the last, I believe it's 4 years, that through the United Way Day of Caring, we've had companies come out there and volunteer to help us out. They've done things like repair bridges. They've constructed benches for us. They've taken down trees. They helped us create a dog trail. Wonderful, wonderful community effort on the Day of Caring. And that, I believe, is October 2 through 6. We're not 100% sure how much we're going to be participating in that yet. Dave Heltzel and I will get together and figure out what projects we have. I like to describe it as ants attacking a potato chip. When they come out there, we'll say, oh, this tree needs taken down. And in 20 minutes, it's down. You're like, oh, my God. It's something our own volunteers would have taken 3 weeks to do, and it's all free labor. And anytime we get that free labor that benefits the community, the township, we keep track of our hours, Dave. I should explain to you. Dave Heltzel, every Monday, when our Monday crew comes, he takes roll. And our new volunteers will look at us and they'll say, well, he's taking roll. I'm not going to be here. What I explain to them is Dave takes roll so that when we write grants, we can show the community support for the park. Mm-hmm. So we started off, our Monday morning maintenance crew started off with six. We're now up to a group. We have 24 on our roster. This morning we had 13 people come out and work for about 2.5 hours.
Got some local sweat equity in there.
Yes,
and foundations.